This is Return to You podcast with me, your host, Erica Straub. Each week, I'll drop in with thought leaders and soulful healers for expansive conversations on resolving the conflict trauma created between you living and loving directly and intimately. To be fulfilled and satisfied in this lifetime, you have to bring your true self forward. But first, you gotta ask the question, who am I? What a profound conversation. One of those that will keep you connected to someone for a lifetime. I'm so excited to introduce you to Sam Gibbs Morris. He's a leader at the intersection of men's work, psychedelics, yogic leadership, and spirituality. He is a speaker, spiritual teacher, psychedelic medicine and breathwork facilitator, and a men's conscious relationship coach. He is the founder of Transcend Breathwork. Sam has aligned his purpose with his innate gifts, creating safe and nurturing space for men to heal and expand their conscious masculine awareness. Sam has worked with over 2,000 men to guide them home to their core and reconnect with their self-worth, cultivate self-trust, and truly become an unwavering presence in their lives and their relationships. Let's drop in.
I would love to know, like, what brought you onto the path? Like, what was the doorway?
Oh, that's a great question. And thank you so much for reaching out and offering this and creating the space for this, because I feel like these conversations, like me and anyone else that you're going to be having them with, are so going to be so impactful. So really, really honoring you for the work that you've done to be able to create a space like this. I know you've talked about the initiation that it is, and honor you for that, for walking into the initiation and leaning in. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So what was the doorway? Oof. I mean, I could say birth was it. There's been some karmic things happening. Cool. Getting emotional already. Some karmic lessons and soul contract stuff that started happening right away with breath mostly. I had a few things happen as a child that were not happen, but experiences that were, they compromised my breath a lot. So one was asthma, severe asthma. My umbilical cord was wrapped around my head when I was born. I had food allergies. Now I had a tendency to choke on my food a lot. So I had the Heimlich maneuver done on me probably 6 or 7 times from 0 to 15 years old. And so all this was, you know, that these are like throat things and lung things and breath things. And so, you know, I've been doing breath work since I was 5 years old, and I didn't recognize it until about 2 years ago when I actually started doing breath work, like facilitating. Like, I've been doing this for a really long time, because the doctors would give me these exercises for asthma. They breathe like a snake, or, pursed-lip breathing, like these things that would really, what they're designed to do is regulate your nervous system. And so I've been doing this for a very long time. And then throughout my life, I had these other little gateways that were just kind of directing me on the path. And I've fully stepped onto the, like, quote unquote, spiritual or conscious path when I was 35. And I got into some like landmark type stuff with, it wasn't landmark, but it was something like it. And it was, you know, the feedback I got there was you're walking dead. Like, you're just a dead man walking through the world, like completely numb, completely closed off, completely shut down. And it was true. I was also in that period in the middle of 15 years of pretty, pretty deep alcohol and drug addiction. And, you know, that started when I was 23, and it went until I was 38. And then that 38 years old is when this massive portal opened up. I was sitting by myself at my kitchen table, 4 a.m. in the morning, Charlotte, North Carolina. All my, you know, quote unquote friends, aka drug dealers, had just left. And I was sitting there, and, you know, I had everything that I thought I needed, like a pile of cocaine and a bottle of rum and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, this thing, this something came over me that said, you're done. This is over. And from that moment, I just made these decisions to communicate better and, like, heal myself. And the one thing that kept me, so I had been in that kind of loop of starting and stopping alcohol and drugs for since age 33, so 5 years. And this time was different, because all the other times was I know I kind of know I need to stop. Like, it probably would be good if I stopped. And life without it is way too scary. So I'm not going to stop. I'm going to try and figure out a way that I can do this life with the drugs and the alcohol, because, you know, safety net thing. And this time was like clear that like I am scared out of my pants. And I know that this, whatever is happening right here, absolutely cannot go on. And I committed. And spent the next year basically in rehab, sober living, moved all the way across the country, started everything new. It was, you know, I was a commercial real estate broker at the time, and I left that behind and stepped into, like, a lot. It was AA for 6 years. And then after AA, it got into the plant medicine path and stepping onto that. And that, like, the past, so it's been 11 years. The past 11 years have been just a constant upward trajectory. Of course, not without lessons, of course, but you know, the 6 years in AA was like this amazing starting point that I needed, because it showed me really where to look. I was looking at things, but I was also not really looking in the right places. I was looking at the external human experience of like broken relationships and failed jobs and no money in the bank and heartbreak, but I wasn't looking inward. I wasn't really, really looking inward. Like, I was looking inward in the sense that, like, I don't like having this experience, but I wasn't looking at, you know, one of the things that moment when I got into AA showed me was that, you know, when you get into a room of recovery or AA, whatever it is, there's some stories that kind of percolate. They're kind of the through lines. One, a lot of like verbal, sexual, physical abuse, violence, alcoholic homes, broken homes. And like, those are the stories you hear a lot of. And I'm sitting there in the rooms and I'm like, I don't have any of that. Like, what am I? And it forced me to say, okay, I don't have any of that. And I'm still sitting in this chair. I still did everything that I could. I got arrested 20 plus times. I tried to commit suicide in 2009, went to rehab 6 times. I can't hold a job. I can't have a relationship. All the markers are there and I'm confused as to why I'm there. And so it forced me to say, like, okay, let's look back at, you know, my childhood. All the things I told you are kind of new revelations for me. And like, when I knew, I mean, past 11 years, because if you had asked me prior to that, I was aware that I had asthma and food allergies, but I was also really aware that like there was a loving home and, you know, we didn't really want for much. And there was trips and I was playing tennis and golf every summer and skiing every winter. And, just, I would have said things were really good. And I was also having an experience of lots of little CPSD moment throughout the first 15 or 16 years of my life. And that's what this looking inward and seeing what was really there showed me. And it showed me so much, as far as, you know, like, okay, so I know that I have these depressive tendencies, and what's fueling that? Because these patterns will, and this is why I left AA, is that these things that I handled right off the bat, the things I knew about, social anxiety, generalized anxiety, depression, like these things that I knew about. And then, so about 3 years, 5 years, all these things came back. And I'm like, wait a second, I'm 5 years sober. Like, this is supposed to be smooth sailing now. And it wasn't. And so that's when I said, okay, there's something else beyond. Now it's like, okay, AA gave me this great start, but now there's something beyond this that I need to look at. And so that's when I got on the plant medicine path. And that's pretty much what led me to where we are right now.
Yeah, what a empowering and deep, devastating story in all, you know, in all the ways. And as you were sharing the beginning, which I think sometimes our work takes us so long to get back to the actual beginning. Like, yeah, there's layers to take it back that far.
Sure.
Yeah, I can't help but feel this like deep resonance and desire to share how I think my relationship with myself was also formed with distortion with breath.
Mm.
And how like rare that is. I haven't, you know, heard someone share that was like a big part of their beginning too. Like, I did this past life regression meditation that took me back into my mom's womb.
Mm.
What I found there was that I was existing in so much smoke, and she's been a lifelong smoker. And it's just this deep knowing that that was the environment that like I was formed in and just, you know, breath being something that's our life force, right? But then being so afraid of it and so afraid that I'm not going to get the next breath. Like that was my first 20 to 30 years of life, is like this fear of like, is the next breath going to come? And yeah, what do I do to try to make sure that it does come? And even I think about breath, when my dad passed away, I was sitting with him when he passed. He was in hospice, but being with him and listening to what it sounds like when breath leaves your body, when a soul leaves their body, this is going to make me emotional. I'm like buzzing and
cool.
And just the sound of that, like I can go right back to that moment. And it was a week later, I started having panic attacks where I couldn't breathe. That's your story about breath and like what it's like to like not be in synergy with our own breath.
Yeah.
Could we ever have a chance? Like, how could we ever, you know, do life and open and be receptive if like our own breath, like we couldn't receive?
It's the ultimate survival mode. Like you're just 20, 30 years for yourself in survival mode. And talk about a scarcity conversation. Like we can talk about scarcity of money and whatever else all we want, but when you're talking about scarcity of breath, that's some real, real talk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some deep, terrifying.
Terrifying.
To some like, dark, when, dark.
Yeah. Life. When you're having an asthma attack and you're like each inhale is questionable, it is harrowing.
Yeah. I think that's an experience that like not a lot of people can relate to. Like,
yeah, very few.
Your terror of those moments like are so traumatic and transformative at the same time.
100%. Like, you talk about like it's essentially a near death experience. And you talk about like these people that have had near death experiences, how they are just a fundamentally different human being because of those experiences. And not to say that other human beings are not evolved or bad. It's just that someone that is like pretty much legitimately looked death in the face and had their mortality questioned, there is no way that you can come back to a human experience and for it to be the same. It's just impossible.
Yeah, it truly is. Like you're forever, forever changed, but coming out of the survivalism of that, what was that like for you to like truly come out of the survivalism?
Yeah. Well, so the thing about survivalism is there's a payoff. There's a payoff to being in survival mode. One is, I mean, obviously survival, but there's on the other side of that, your survival mode is a deep victim state. It's a deep worthiness conversation, because when you're so busy surviving, and like for me, like I said, there was no shortage of love in the house. And I noticed also on a subconscious level, oh, when I'm having an asthma attack, I get more attention. When I'm choking on my food, three people are all of a sudden rushing around me, and then everyone's asking if I'm okay for the next 3 days. Like, and then, so, okay. So my body, my nervous system now recognizes like, okay, love is good, but like, I know when I'm struggling, like there's a little more. And so survival mode is the ultimate struggle. If you're always in survival mode, it's like, and so what happens is that I would create reasons to be in, addiction was a reason to be in survival mode, because leading up to the addiction, one could say that my life was really good. I just bought a house. I was married. I got divorced, but I was married. I had a pretty good job. Like, and then all of a sudden just all hell broke loose. And it was because my nervous system was not okay with being okay. My nervous system was okay with struggle and survival mode. And so basically for the next, I mean, probably I would say 6 years, 7 years into, the sobriety part of the addiction, like, and like being removed 6 or 7 or 8 years from that drink, it was still there. Like I was still creating survival mechanisms. A lot of it turned to money. It turned to relationships. It turned to any number of things, career. And when the work is in the nervous system, the work is the breath. It is the somatic releasing. It's the why it's the holding of what the body keeps us for, what the holding on to that keeps manifesting these survival situations. Because, you know, recognizing where the worth really comes from. So my worth actually in survival mode, which I thought for so long, which I could sit here and tell you right now, survival mode is terrible and all around me. So like, how terrible do I really think it is if it's all around me all the time? And so that then turns into like, this is my value proposition, because it was really you understand the attention and people are coming to your rescue and people are giving you, you know, sympathy. And so this is like, oh, this feels valuable. This feels like I'm bringing value to the world. In reality, it's more of a liability because you're like constantly on edge of complete failure and complete shutdown. And so recognizing, for me, it was doing that somatic work to release that a lot of that asthmatic stuff and like a lot of shame. Shame was fueling so much of my life all through the addiction. And then, you know, no one talks about this. Like everyone's, oh, when you get out of alcoholism addiction, it's the drugs and alcohol healing. The real healing is the shame that comes with the years spent in addiction, you know? And a lot of times, like the addict or the person that's not in the addiction anymore can't break free from that because they feel so badly about how they harmed everyone else. And so for me, I held on to this shame and guilt for my addiction for 9 years. It was like 2 years ago. And it finally came to the surface of how deep this was and how to release this. And so releasing that from my body and then recognizing like, okay, that it's actually better. And this is like a very like, you know, language thing. Like it's actually better for me to be an asset and valuable and spacious and have capacity and be safe and grounded than it is to be a complete survival mode addict, essentially.
I'm so curious, like your experience around release. Like that really jumps out to me because I just, and this probably also some of my own projections, but how shame, you know, really plays into our capacity or unwillingness to release. And so I'm curious what comes up for you around that.
So, yeah, wow. What came up for me? So, the first time I got really intimate with my shame, when you're in shame, it's kind of one of those situations where it's so much that you almost don't see it. It's kind of, there's a scene in Indiana Jones, I think, when he's looking for an X, like an X marks the spot, a treasure map, but he's on the floor of the library. And he's like, I don't know where it is. And then his buddy goes up to the ledge and looks down and he's actually standing in the middle of the X. Shame is like that X. Until you can like remove yourself from it and look at it, you can't see it because it's too much. And so in 2021, I went down to Peru and sat with ayahuasca for 3 weeks. And it was pretty, really, really clear that shame had fueled my friendships with other men, my relationships. And it was all about, I am feeling so shameful of myself. I will do anything and everything that I possibly can to one, put you on a pedestal, and two, to get you to like me. So people pleasing, saying I love you when I don't really mean it, selling myself out, saying no when I should say, like it the list goes, like we all, the people pleasing thing, we can go on forever about that. But it was just this, everything about me, even my career, everything about how I showed up was please just like me. Just please make this feeling that I have inside of me stop by saying I love you to me, or by saying, yeah, come over to my house to watch the game. Like just anything, breadcrumbs. And so that's what started to show me there. And then I kept asking, I said, what else is there? Like, how deep does this go? And then ayahuasca showed me that in 2009, this is when I tried to commit suicide. I jumped off the second story of a bar. Because I was so full and riddled with shame that I just felt there was no other outlet for it. And so that moment in 2021, when I got shown that depth of my shame, back to a very physical experience, I had cancer in my mouth twice, 2009 and 2011. So right around that time that I jumped off the balcony was my first experience with oral cancer. Same like within 2 months of each other, within 60 days of each other. And then, 2021, I went down to Peru and sat, and ayahuasca showed me this, all this shame and how it was in my life. All of a sudden, that spot where the cancer was started to change and shift. It got a little rougher. And then about a year later, maybe like 18 months later, I went to Burning Man, and I left Burning Man, and that spot was full on like open wound in my mouth. Like, and so I said, and the doctors had cleared me. 2011, 2018, the doctors had cleared me, said, you know, unless something drastic happens, no need to come back. And so now it's 2022 and it's November and it's something drastic is happening. I can't open my mouth without pain. I can't eat without pain. Like every time I brush my teeth, it's just, it's like that pinky blood stuff. And so I went to see two doctors, November 1st and November 4th, and they both, one was a naturopath, one was an ENT, and they both looked at it and said, your cancer's back. We have to get a biopsy done immediately. And so I immediately met like within 6 weeks or so. And so I had a trip to plan to Costa Rica to go serve my medicine and to sit with ayahuasca again. And so now I'm going to Costa Rica. And so they said to me, the doctors were like, yeah, we need to do the biopsy, determine what stage it is and treatment plan. And you know, what level of chemo radiation? And immediately my brain went, no, that's not how this is going to go. And so, I had this trip planned to Costa Rica. And so I said, well, this is part of my path. Like I was ready to go to Mexico and go to some like off grid retreats down there and like do the whole holistic thing. And, so I went down to Costa Rica, sat with ayahuasca. And the last night I just got this download that said, go where you've never gone. And so I just drank four cups of ayahuasca. The last 4 hours of that night were the most brutal I've ever experienced. And it was the purging of that shame. All of it was just coming out, being shown, and just all of it was there. And I got to the point about 4 hours in, maybe 4 hours, but I got to the point where I was like, I said to myself, I was like, God damn it, just fucking stop. Just stop this. And immediately, within seconds, I said, you know what? No, it's God, thank you. I started saying, God, thank you. And it all stopped. All of it left. And then I came back and got the biopsy done the week after that. And the cancer was gone. And so that was the release. That was the... So I knew it wasn't physical. I knew it was like spiritual, emotional, mental, body stuff. And I looked in and I allowed it to just come through and purged it.
Oh gosh. Shame really is like, it takes you to your knees. The level of like gust and repulsion and just the felt sense of shame. I don't think there's really even a word big enough to and it is this feeling of like it just wants to get out. Mm-hmm. Just wants to get fucking out. And it's so big and scary. We find all the ways to not let it out.
Yeah. And then we'll create more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I haven't had something quite as significant as cancer showing up in my body, but I certainly, like, my shame, I carried so deeply in my sacral to the point where, like, I would say all of my life up until I, you know, started the work, I couldn't even put my hands on my own body there because it was so, like, dense and, like, alive and, like, It was truly insane. Like, couldn't even bring my hands to that part of my body, which now it's like, that's where my hands immediately go to, like, you know, to like drop in and like be back in my hips and like all of that. But it manifested there and turned into this just awful, like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and all these, you know, different diagnoses that they had given me and like experiencing so much like internal bleeding. And like sicker than a dog, right?
Yeah.
And I was that sick for over a year. Over a year, I didn't tell a single soul.
Oh,
that's the power of shame. Like literally internally bleeding and didn't tell a single soul. Just going on like I was totally fine. And I'm like, that level of shame and that level of denial, like that's an intensity that like my body was, you know, it was dying to keep this.
Yeah.
But then once it, you know, came to light and, you know, someone had to take me to, you know, get help because I was in too much shame to even ask for it. Mm-hmm. And all the doctors same, it was like so much medication and all of this and all of this. And like internally, I was like, I don't have this thing that you think I have. And they're like, every test we run, you have it. And it's a lifelong sentence and you're fucked.
Yeah.
I was like, no, just no. And it was kind of around the same time the panic attacks started. So I was, you know, really on my knees.
Yeah. And
I was like, this is not mine. Like, I just became so clear it's not mine. And now, you know, 10, 15 years later, I have zero anything and none of it was through medication, but all of it was through this work, like really learning how to release, like letting people see like who I truly am, even when there's shame there. Cause I don't think it necessarily totally goes away, but I think we can purge and release so much of it. So it's not manifesting in our field or as protectors, or we're no longer blocked from like the life cycle of like sensation, feeling, expression.
That's it right there. Cause like, cause you were caught in that stuck energy that Michael Singer calls it samskara. Like you had a massive samskara in your sacral. And now you're right. Like the shame, like that's something we get to carry with us. And you learn through this work, like you just talked about, this life cycle of it. Like, oh, I see. Okay. I see it. How do you want to be expressed? How do you want to come through? Which version needs love? Like all the things that we get to do, and it just flows through you, and it flows through you, and that becomes power, the energetic power.
Yeah, it totally alchemizes, and it becomes this thing that like connects you to someone more so than this thing that means that I'm so separate and
yes.
I isolate, and I better, you know, be in secrecy, purgatory because of things that have happened in my life that weren't even my fault.
Right. Or past life. Or like stuff that didn't even happen in my life. Like stuff I epigenetically carried into this with me.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm curious what you think about this, but shame and being able to receive. I feel like there's a huge...
I mean, short answer, yes.
I'll give you the long one.
Shame doesn't mean that I'm ashamed, like I'm ashamed of something I did. Shame means that I am a broken, bad person. So a lot of times, like we talk about shame, to give it some context, shame or guilt. Like guilt is I did something bad. Shame is I am bad. So if you're bad, that means like you're physically bad, you're emotionally bad. It means that your emotions don't matter. It means that no one could ever hold space for you, aka receive. No one could ever, like, intimacy is out the window because, you know, you want someone to see you naked, or because, you know, you're so fear of failure that you're going to get rejected. Like it literally blocks you from all forms of, if you're shameful, the money's not going to come in because you have, you know, because money essentially is an expansion. It's an expansive energy that when you're shameful, the last thing you want when you're overcome with shame is to be seen or to be expanded, because that means what I expand. My shame also expands, and that gets bigger. And then people, and the biggest thing that, oh my God, this is so good. The biggest thing that I was told is that shame, this is how shame operates. Shame is the fear that the world will see me like I see me. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you see yourself as shameful and broken and less than and not enough or too much, whenever it is, as long as you see yourself like that, you will hide yourself from the world, and you will never, the receiving will be completely blocked on all levels.
Oh, I so feel that. And if you are in so much shame, and I think especially when it's unconscious, all you see in someone else's eyes as they're looking at you is your own shame, right? Yeah. So like, I can't make eye contact with anyone then, not just like physically, but like metaphorically, like I can't meet you there because what you are going to show me is the void in me. And I can't see that. I can't be with that. I can't witness that. It's too much.
Too much. And I'll run away from you in a heartbeat. In my last relationship, this is how it all broke down. It's because I was in the moments, I felt so much shame. I saw it after the fact, but I literally was like, I gotta go. Like, this is too much.
Yeah.
Too painful.
Yeah.
And then it plays in like relationship. Sorry. One more thought.
No, go ahead.
Please. Relationship, it plays as in like, okay, so I'm masculine or whatever the one carrying the shame is. I'm shameful. So I'm gonna pull back and run away. And then you, the other person, all you want to do is love me, but I'm unlovable. And so you're going to feel rejected because I haven't communicated this is what's going on with me. So I'm going to be shameful and run away, and you're going to feel rejected and abandoned. And now we're in this death cycle of a relationship.
It is a death cycle. And I'm glad you said that first, because you totally just like were picking up on, we're sharing a wavelength here, because that's exactly what I was like feeling into, is like when that shows up in the relational field. And yeah. And we use the contents of like the man or the masculine pulling away and what that does to the feminine mm-hmm. energy.
Yeah.
When feminine, and I'll speak just for myself, actually, when I'm in shame and someone pulls away, it's like that level of rejection and that level of abandonment, it either inspires that chasing energy. Oh no, we froze. Are you there?
I'm here.
I can't see you, or you're frozen.
What about now?
You're coming back. Okay, you're back.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay. I don't know if I know how to edit that out, so.
Oh, well.
Welcome to everyone.
Welcome to real life.
No, so like if I'm in so much shame and my partner pulls away, what that provokes in me is to start matching their energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm realizing that the more shame work that I do, which means I can receive myself and receive everything I'm feeling, I don't have to match you anymore. I can stand. I can stand in the flames of intimacy. I can stand in that intimate circle while you have to move in your shame. But I'm going to stand here. Mm. I'm not leaning out and I'm not leaning back. I'm just here in my center. And that kind of work has been some of the most profound work for me. And it doesn't mean the partnerships have worked out, because not everyone can meet me there.
Yes.
Like that can be way too much for someone. But learning how to like break apart this matching, I think is one of the most like profound lessons I'm definitely currently in and still learning about shame in like relational dynamics.
Yeah, that's beautiful. When you talk about the matching, I think that's where a lot of times like relationships will turn, have like this dark turn, because essentially one or the other is matching that lower vibration, and then you're both just stuck at the lower vibration. And then it's like, okay, so yeah, like there's a lot to be said for like you standing there and being in that is meeting your partner in the depths of his shame. And if you go there and you meet him and he's there and he's like, no, I'm still not into it. Like there's not much else you can do. Then it's about, okay, I'm going to call my energy back now and be over here. And you don't have to leave, but just know that like I've gone as far as I can with you. And so when you can recognize, that's where we talk, that's real space holding. So like going down and like it's in being in shame, being both people being shameful, I think that gets called space holding a lot, but it's not. The space holding is like, listen, I am in my full sovereignty and power, and I'm going to go there with you, and I will only go as far as is safe for me to go, and then it's on you. And I will go really far in there with you. And I'll speak for myself now. Like I can go into some really, really dark places, and I can, you know, be there with somebody. And there comes a point when I have to say, I've done all I can here. Like I need to go back, and I'm gonna stand watch at the cave door. But I'm not going to be in this cave with you anymore.
Yeah. How do we like find those limits? Like how have you been able to kind of discover like those edges?
Yeah. Trial and error. The error is the great teacher. You know, it's trial and error, but it's also really, trial and error is not, it's of course, I was, you know, joking, but still, it's not like the right way to say it, but it is the kind of the energy of it is like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to see what's there and I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to stumble and fall on my face and run away sometimes. And the thing is like, at what point do I recalibrate myself to center and learn to not look away? So the moment that I start feeling the urge to, so I used to be a big looker awayer, you know, like, oh, that running, looking away, same thing. Now it's about like, okay, I feel this urge to look away. I really want to look away. So now it is, I will pause and double my efforts on the looking and then understand that that might be the edge for me. That might be it. That might be my max for that day or that time period. And then I get to say, do I want to stay here and be in this? Or do I need to pull back a little bit? And so like, and so instead of going all the way into like the error, the trial and the error and falling on the face, it is like, how do I go far enough that I'm moving and I'm leaning in and also not being destructive?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so edgy. It's so edgy. And I think like that edge expands, right? Every time we lean in a little bit more.
Yeah.
And like sit in that fire that comes up. It's such a fire in my body. I think what's been the most helpful that at least like in my makeup is having the felt sense in my body, like being in my body and like the somatic knowing of these edges. And for me, it's always been about anxiety. And maybe it's not even like that word doesn't even feel quite right anymore. But I think that's just the most relatable word to describe it.
Yeah.
But there's a level of anxiety that shows up in my system, like a level of chaos that I'm like, this is self-abandonment. Mm-hmm. I've entered that space. I know I'm pretty clear, you know, like where I'm at, like where do I end and you begin? But the second I get into that self-abandonment space, the chaos that ensues and the fire and the shit show that starts in my body, I'm like, we're not in self anymore. Where is self? Like self is being outsourced. Now I'm not receiving what's here anymore. I'm just trying to get something.
Yeah. Safety.
Yeah.
I'm just reaching and clawing and scratching for safety at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anxiety is a great one because that's, you know, anxiety, that is the nervous system essentially freaking out, like too overloaded. Yeah. You know, and for me, it looks a lot like nausea. Like I'll just feel like nausea or like the appetite kind of goes away. Like, oh, like that, just that pit in the stomach is the very felt sense of that. And then there's also, like a kind of like a dropping of energy. Like it's like you're feeling really good, feeling really strong. And then all of a sudden, just like maybe the heart skips a beat or the stomach takes a turn and you're like, oh, like everything just kind of dropped. And like when I notice that point, that's when I get to say, okay, ooh, what's going on here? Like what happened? Because I can see like the things and like I'm very aware of the actual things going around me. And where did that send me internally? Like what did that do for me? Like what version of me or what emotion did that trigger inside of me that is checking me out, like removing me from self, removing me from that presence?
You said this a while back, but I feel like it's really relevant to what you just said. When we numb out, right? Like, which I think is a brilliant survival strategy and needed in moments until we have capacity. But when we numb out, we essentially turn off all this information that our body is trying to give us. And that's where I think we fall into all that trial and error, right? It's like when we numb this stuff out or it's like, just make me feel better. Yeah. Anything to make me not feel this. We're turning off all of this like messaging our body is trying to give us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's so much, every part of the human wants to be like, let's get through this as fast as possible. Whether it's heartbreak or even like a momentary like anxiety about a work thing. It's like, what do we get to do to move through as fast as possible? It's a conflict in relationship. Like, how do we get to the solution? Like, let the conflict breathe. Let that moment breathe inside of you. And yeah, like you said, numbing out. I mean, I think that it's probably saved a lot of lives. And there gets to be the point that you get to honor that point when it's like, okay, I've been numbing out, watching Netflix or whatever for a month straight. You know, it's maybe it's time to kind of like start to like not do that.
Yeah.
You know, like taking sleeping pills, whatever it is, like whatever that the mechanism is, there comes a point when you have to like say like, okay, this is not serving me anymore. It's actually bringing me backwards because I'm now, it's very comfortable, but I'm also missing a lot. And I think that when you get to the point where you actually, even the awareness or the recognition that, okay, I think that this needs to change, that right there could be enough for a little bit. And then it's like, okay, how do I now like expand that a little further? Because really these experiences that we're talking about, whether the micro or the macro of life, are expansion opportunities. You know, like I'm walking through a really awful heartbreak, painful heartbreak right now. And I know I talked about this in my men's group this morning. I talked about like, I know that there's just so much evidence that this expansion is happening in my life that I'm like, and what I know now is that it gets to be both. Like, just because we're having an uncomfortable thing and we want to make up that it's a life sentence like this forever, that's why we numb out. Because like, oh, it's gonna be like this forever, better make plans, you know, better make alternate plans. Whereas like, when I can say like, I'm having two simultaneous experiences here, that's when the numbing out kind of stops, because you're like, okay, so if I'm having this expansive experience and also this painful experience, let me lean into the expansion. And that's, and then recognizing that the numbing out is only choking out the expansion. It's not choking out the pain. It's covering the pain, but it's really hampering the expansion part. And if I want more expansion, because that's what nature is more trees, more squirrels, more nuts, more all of it. Humans, more human. That's when the recognition, the numbing out is taking away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when we can come to terms to that, we're not as likely to keep numbing the pain.
100%.
Hold that nuance that, yeah, this fucking sucks. It's so uncomfortable. Absolutely. And give me more. Give me more. Because this is leading to our greatest potential, to more expansion, to deeper love, to deeper intimacy. But what it takes to get to the point to actually say, give me more.
Yeah.
Like, that's a journey. At least I can say for myself, like, that has been a real painful, deep journey to be able to arrive at, give me more. Like, I receive this. I accept this. I surrender to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I have nothing left to add to that, because that is like you said it all right there. Like, it is the journey to get there. Is the journey to get there. It takes what it takes. And it's humbling and harrowing and beautiful and loving and dark and light and all the things.
I know for me, like, when I was having so much anxiety and it was like, you know, in the trenches with it, I did have to use medication to help numb it, right? Because I was so dysregulated and so out of my window of tolerance that to me, it was like becoming just equally traumatizing, and there was no healing. But so first there had to be this like numbing quality to start the work to where I was at least like somewhat in my body, but like able to start navigating. But it's so wild because that journey has taken me to this chapter in my life where now microdosing is a huge part of my healing. And that being such like an amplifier, like it's wild to move from like numbing substances to amplification. And like part of your work that called me in so much is like your use of plant medicine and psychedelics. And like, I would love if you could speak to that and just what that's shown you, what it continues to show you.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because I think that like the conversation is like, no pharma, no big pharma and all that. But there are, if it comes to the point where like, this is giving me a moment of grace and it's actually not a 4 years of Lexapro, maybe 4 months of Lexapro, something like that. Like, I feel like as a human, we get to honor that and use it for what it's like, that bridge, not like the actual numbing. And then moving on to the things like plant medicine. So, for me, the plant medicine journey, this has been like, this year has been the shift for me. I kind of, once I went through that shame process and that cancer with plant medicine, it was as if all the plant medicine that I had done, the ayahuasca, the bufo, the San Pedro, the mushrooms, all of it was bringing me up from a dark place to a place where I can have my head into the light and be in the light. And now the plant medicine journeys have been more of that expansion, that amplification, you know, so they've served so many purposes for me. And one was like, I needed a lot of help. I needed a lot of healing. I needed to see a lot. Like, that pattern that I was talking about in AA was the human cycle of looking at what we know. So as a human, like, I can only say like, this is a piece of paper in front of me. And I know that because it's a piece of paper in front of me. But like, what about the trees that this came from? What about the squirrel that planted the nut? Like, what about like, what's behind all this? And so, in these patterns that I was operating in, it was all I kept just handling the things I knew about. And I was stuck in the cycle of known. And so I knew right away that plant medicines, as soon as they started calling to me, was, there are things that I do not know. And there's things that I don't know that I don't know, that I really need to see and find out and feel and shine light on and all that. And so as I got on that path, it was really tough, like a lot of really, really dark and harrowing experiences with plant medicines. I will never say bad trips. They were just really, really hard experiences that showed me all the things that I needed that I didn't know, like the suicide. I didn't know that was a suicide attempt until that moment. And so like to show me, like I knew there was shame, but to show me the depth of it, to show me the things I don't know. And within that is so much, like everyone was like, oh, you must've been devastated when you found out that was a suicide attempt. I'm like, actually, I felt really relieved because it finally had left my body. That stored information had left my body and that trauma wasn't there anymore. And so all that work, the plant medicine brought me up from this dark place out of this hole to this place of like fully standing in the light. And now it's like, how can I be more in my purpose? How can I be more in my divine masculinity? How can I show up better for my future girlfriend or wife? How can I show up better as a man for my clients? How can I, like, what do I get to do to amplify this human experience now? Because the healing, it's never done, but most of the big stuff has been handled for me.
I love that, like, there's, you know, it brought you to these experiences with so much more, like a wider aperture to understand kind of what you've been through, but such a relief because it's like, it makes sense too. Like it clicks things into place.
Yes.
And this idea that it's like actually truly leaving your body. I think like what brought me to the edge of microdosing and now kind of stepping into doing a little bit bigger doses. I wouldn't even say macro doses yet. It's baby steps for someone who was previously very masculinized and a control freak and all those things, right? So
I get it.
But it's really opening so much, like the amplification of things that it opens, like it's wild. It's like truly mind-blowing of what it's opening. And I got to a point where it was like, I've done so much self-work, right? Like I understand a lot. I'm not saying I know everything. I will never be close to that. But there's been so much work, right? Like there's so much reseating myself at the center of who I am and really being able to be seen and to be held and to hold other people and to meet them in this place, but still such an active pain body. And that was like the piece I was like, I don't know what to do with this. You know, yeah. Like it's like I keep meeting this pain body and it's taking up so much of my vessel. There's no way that I can receive more with all of this already stored inside of me. And that brought me into this world, into this like, okay, let's see what's here. Let's see if there's a portal or a channel that opens to like actually start to like release this pain that's been there and not continue to contain it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's exactly it. Like it's that with microdosing, especially that fight or flight response is what's keeping all that pain. Like you're essentially every morning you wake up and you're like, okay, pain, checking in. Cool. Fight or flight. Here we go. And now with microdosing, you get to say like, wait,
help me out, Alex.
I would wake up every morning. And so it's legit like that. Like, okay, world, how can you threaten me today? And so then when you drop into the microdosing stuff, that fight or flight just doesn't come online and you get to operate without the trauma response of your pain, of your shame, of whatever it is. And you feel that, you feel the body finally relax and release. And that's why like, you know, being emotional or having some rage and some healthy anger every once in a while will come up during microdosing because this stuff that has been suppressed. Because in fight or flight, there's no time for crying. Survival mode, no time for that. Like we'd have to survive.
Got stuff to do.
Yeah, we got to breathe. Come on. Yeah. And so when you give yourself the chance to experience yourself like that, so much happens that you just touched on all of it. The expansion and its experience of self.
What would you say, and maybe this is a little bit of a personal question, but I'm sure it could help someone else too. What kind of leads you from the microdosing space to step more into like plant medicine and, you know, macro and deeper work there? Like what would you say that bridge is like?
Yeah, I love this. So I'll speak to my experience and then I'll speak to the experience that I see a lot. My experience was coming out of AA. So I had a lot of AA programming that was like, oh, you're going to end up back in jail. You're going to have to reset your sobriety date. And I had to kind of leave the whole sobriety recovery conversation language in the where it was. Like I knew that like stepping on this path, like that conversation was going to get in the way. And it honestly, it hung on for like a couple ceremonies where I was like, I would go into a ceremony and be like, in the middle of the ceremony, my sobriety date, I'm surely going to be in jail tomorrow morning. Like I was full on back in my addict self that I thought I had healed so much. And so for me, stepping out of AA, leaving that where it was and not exiling it, but just saying, I'm going to put that over there and it's still a part of me and I still thank AA every day for it. And this is the new reality. And so for me, it was getting right with that conversation, clearing that out of my system. And then I started with microdosing and then that led me to macrodosing mushrooms. And then that led me to San Pedro, which is Wachuma. And then that was also Bufo and then more Bufo and then ayahuasca. And so my shift was getting really clear. And I think that doing a lot of work as a human being, like going through those cycles that we were talking about, like understanding your patterns as a human being, like, okay, I've been through this one 3 times and you know, there's something I don't know here. I'm ready for something else. I'm ready to be shown something new. And that's a pretty solid indicator that it might be time to look into it. And I think that for people to move, it's really about a calling. Like that, you know, everyone like, I serve Bufo and mushrooms and people come to me like, is it okay to start here? Like, should I be starting with this? Should I be starting with that? And I'm just like, you know, there's not really a rhyme or reason to it. Like if microdosing is a great place to start for sure, because it builds trust. You build trust with yourself. You build trust with the medicine. You start to experience this like real consciousness that you're talking about. And then from there, it's really, it's that surrender, it's that openness. Like it's what's being shown to me. Like, oh, I've been microdosing on a microdosing protocol for 9 months. And then all of a sudden someone calls me up and be like, hey, I'm organizing an ayahuasca retreat in March. And you're like, whoa, I don't know. Probably a yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and then just knowing like these medicines essentially will choose you. You know, we like to think like, oh, I'm deciding to go. And yes, like we have to decide to book the trip, to get on the plane, to go to the, you know, yes. And the medicine will present itself to you when the medicine decides that you're ready to receive it. And that's the way that's the kind of download that's always come to me is what is the medicine when it's ready will present itself to me. Like I was supposed to sit with Bufo for the first time in almost a year, like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And I was like nervous. I was like, oh gosh, this is big. And I got a call, like a legit chest call the day before. And I was like, I can't, there's no way that I could inhale this medicine and have any, it would not be good. And to me, I had decided that I was going to sit with the medicine. The medicine said, no, not right now. Yeah. And so when you can learn to tap in to it's your intuition and it's your communication with the medicine's energies and the medicine's life force, because they are so intelligent. And so you will never be put, an opportunity to sit with medicine will never be put in front of you if you're not ready for it. And it then becomes your job to feel into it and say, is this right for me? Is this the time? Yes or no?
Yeah. Yeah. I so feel that, like even just from the microdosing, like the trust that's been built and the way I'm trusting myself in a different way and, you know, increasing certain doses sometimes and then being like, you know, it's we're off for a few days. Like that's how it's going to be, but there's definitely trust in the wisdom of it. But what came to mind as you were talking about leaving this like a vocabulary, languaging, mindset, persona behind, I relate to that in a huge way because I think I'm leaving the therapeutic language behind. Mm. You know, like I never wanted to be a therapist. I'm not a therapist. I sit with people, I hold space with people, I mentor people, but I'm not a therapist. That was never me. But you know, you're in that space for so long, whether it be AA or therapy, and you just develop this like rigidity almost, like I statements. And you know, like there, of course, there's great things that come out of that, but starting to just wake up so deeply that there's something so much bigger beyond that, right? And to me, it's like this just like making art out of everything, like making love to everything, you know? And you can't fucking do that from a, I feel this way because you did this to me and da 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 space. So I like the plant space is calling to me because there's this like fluidity to it. Mm-hmm. There's openness. There's this dance to it, which feels so different than this like rigid little like I'm safe now, but that's it. It's ending at safety. There's no more. There's no dance. There's no fire. There's no, you know? So that I feel resonance in what you were saying about like kind of, yes, this is a part of me and a big part and it served me so well, but kind of right here and there's more in this field.
Yeah. I love everything you just said so much. It's identity. You know, AA, like their essentially business model is every day come in and identify yourself as an alcoholic. That started to really mess with me. Like, I don't feel like I'm an alcoholic anymore. I don't want to keep saying this. Like, I'm understanding now that words are spells and I'm just, because on the other side of I'm an alcoholic every day, I'm broken. I need fixing. I was just like, I don't feel that way anymore. And so like therapy, a lot of it is the same kind of thing. It's like identifying as with those conversations. And so with these plant medicines, your identity is probably going to get a hit. And you're going to have to really start to like, but what in that though is a massive, like a blank canvas of recalibration to like, what do I truly identify as? Like, who do I truly identify as? Like, what is my real reason for being here? What do I see myself as without someone telling me to tell me I'm an alcoholic every day?
Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't know me at this time because we just crossed worlds, but literally 6 months ago, I'd say maybe a year. I started my whole business under Anxious Female, my brand, and it was beautiful and it called in the right people and it, whatever, right? Like great brand, but I stayed in that box and in that identity for so long when it was like, this is not who I am. This might be a part of my journey, but like, how do I get out of this box and this identity and kind of like the next iteration, you know? It's so beautiful how that happens. Like we're continuing to evolve and, you know, we don't even have any idea who we can really become. Like it's so limitless is like the most amazing part of it. Like we get so stuck on like, this is who I am or this is what I know, but there's so much more that we can become.
Oh, like, limitless is the best way to say it. Like, and with like just being so open to like, what do you got? Like I read a great book by, forget her name. It's called, the book is called, It's Not My Money. It's Not Your Money. And it's about way more than money, but her thing is like in every moment, offer the journey fully to love and then just see what happens. Just see what happens. And it's been the best mantra I've ever had in my entire life is I'm just offering it to love.
Like,
what do you got?
Yeah. I think just bringing it to like the image that keeps coming to me in like meditations and just in my orbit is the altar. Like just bring it to the altar. Just bring it.
Yeah.
Like bring it there.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen, how it's going to transform, what, you know, what's going to alchemize, but bring it to the altar.
Yeah. Cause it knows way more than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. So good. Like I keep going with you. This is so beautiful. But I do want to take a moment and just make sure that we can send people to your work to find you. So where's the best place that they can link up with you?
Yeah, thank you very much. Before I get there, this has exceeded all. I had a lot of my expectations, but I was really excited about this and this has exceeded all of it. It's been so wonderful to do this with you. Thank you so much. Best place to find me is Instagram at Sam Gibbs Morris. That's G-I-B-B-S, Sam Gibbs Morris. And then all other social medias and the website is the same.
Beautiful. And is there anything that you're calling people into right now or any space holding that you're doing right now?
Yeah. So I was going to wait till January, but I was too excited and it's too good. Starting now, my whole mission is around a coming home. And so it's based around, like, we've all heard the hero's journey where the event happens, hero goes out, hero conquers dragons, hero conquers dragons and hero keeps conquering dragons. And then what always gets forgotten is that the last step is actually the coming back home. And especially as men, like this started with the survival mode. Like we talked about this, how it makes us feel so good and worthy to be fighting dragons all the times that we forget to bring ourselves back home to our women, to our children, to our life, to ourselves. And so my whole mission, whether that's one-on-one coaching or private retreats or group retreats, is all designed around leading people back home from the hero's journey.
I love that. That's such a powerful reframe of the whole journey. Cause it has to be full circle.
It has to be full circle.
Yeah. What's the point if you don't bring it full circle?
Yeah. You're always out fighting dragons, and you're leaving your life back home unattended to and not in, no joy and no love, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. I just have to add this to it because it just sparks something for me. It's like, it is like the journey of healing trauma too, is like we go to this place to feel safe, but then we just stay there. And like this whole other part of this journey is like coming back alive and like returning to pleasure. Like how can we receive so deeply and like feel an even deeper level of connection through pleasure? We can't stop at safety. There's a whole other piece of this like circle.
Yes. Yes. That's a perfect way to end this because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sam. Like this was like beyond, and I'm just thrilled to drop in with you to honor you, like the work that you've done, the journey that you've been on, like not an easy one, but I'm a like huge believer that things happen in that way because of the potential that was there. So thank you. Being just like a divine masculine man, making me feel so safe to even open up more in this moment. And I'm so excited to stay connected with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Erica, thank you so much. This has been such an honor. I fully received that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
If this podcast feels in resonance with you, I would be so grateful for 30 seconds of your time to follow or subscribe to the Return to You podcast, to leave a 5-star rating and review, and to share this episode with someone you love who's on the journey home to themselves too. Thank you so much for being here. I see you.